I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, let's take you out to Indianapolis where the Commanders head coach, Dan Quinn, is meeting with the media. Let's listen.
Here at this time and talked about how important it is to turn the page and get ready for what's ahead and the challenges that go with that. Honestly, it's a similar message today. The biggest difference is the record. And they were way different. But the message should still be similar each and every year as you're going through it and the process that you go through to get there. So whether you kick ass and throw a hell of a year or not nearly enough wins, the only carryovers I really want are the lessons that you want to take, you know, from that season and don't repeat them again. And there are plenty for us. But as it begins, there's a cool part to this process. We had free agency meetings last week, now here and doing a lot of the interviews in the evenings. There's a lot of cool things that start during this week in envisioning, you know, what parts of your team could look different, you know, by adding some of the players. So with all that said, glad to get rocking with you guys, and we'll go through it all.
Coach, I know you're a huge supporter of emerging mental players. How much do you lean on mental health for your players and these guys that are coming out for mental health?
Yeah, it's a big deal. And I think, first off, it's heartbreaking to hear, you know, about Rondale. But I'm hopeful that we get to a point that we're not talking about mental health just when a tragedy hits, but that we're talking about it on a regular basis. Then we know we're making real strides in that. One of the things from the NFL standpoint, the advancements we've made is in player engagement. And knowing that each team, you know, has a full team there ready to help and support and put those resources into effect. But that would be my, you know, my hope that we're talking about it way more than just, you know, when tragedy, you know, takes place. John, yeah, I think one of the things I really respect from their team, like an identity and those are things that, you know, can stand the test of time and last. But I thought, just when you're playing his teams through the years, it's going to be a tough game. And the attitude, the style of the team, players may change, you know, and they did, you know, through the years. But I thought the identity of John stayed consistent, even though scheme may change offensively, how they would do things. But I think that's like the mark of a really good coach. Yeah, isn't that awesome to have Mike back in Pittsburgh of all places? It's such a cool thing. He has such pride of being from Pittsburgh. And so any of us that know Mike, we've all heard, you know, Pittsburgh stories. But I think it's fitting for him to go there because when I think of Mike, I think of discipline. I think of toughness. I think of things that, like we were talking about Harbaugh, that stand the test of time in coaching. And I got to see that firsthand, you know, with Mike and what that looks like on a regular basis of really high standards, not letting it slip. And he's going to do great things there. It's a fantastic organization. I thought that's just a great fit for Mike and for Pittsburgh.
Man, heading into next year, what do you think the biggest improvements can be on the roster or the coaching staff in general to return to an NFC Championship or US Super
Bowl? Well, we did a lot of digging to start off. And so the first piece of that, we've had some staff changes that we've went through. And although those are difficult, there's also a lot of excitement that comes with that. How we'll feature the players, what things would be different. And then the first thing you want to do from a player standpoint, obviously we evaluate our own team on the roster, how we feature them, who are free agents. And then the whole next process begins, free agency around the league and then through the draft. So you just don't want to miss one step of those. The first step for that was on the coaching side. Then it goes into your own team and then free agency and then finally onto the draft. So it takes the full process to get there and go through that. And then as you get into the spring and training camp, putting your team together and creating standards like we talked about earlier, that's why I love coaching, honestly, is putting the puzzle pieces in the right spots to go make that happen. We've got a lot of heavy hitters on this roster, and I can't wait to get back to work with them. We're close, Nikki. We're, I would say, probably a day or two away from like all the way finalizing. But yeah, for the most part, it's pretty intact, and we've had good meetings with the coaches. They've begun that process. We had a week last week where a lot of it was devoted to free agency, but it's been nice to see David and Durante and the staffs, you know, kind of build their connection as they're talking through systems together. There's some good energy that comes from that because you're actually starting at the beginning to say, well, this is why we're going to call this this, and this is how we want to play this. And so I like that feeling of what that is, and I like, you know, what I'm seeing so far from them. Yeah, it matters a lot because that ability to affect the QB, it's one of the biggest tenets in winning the game, you know, for obviously like, you know, scoring and that, but the ability to hit and pressure the quarterback, it also forces takeaways. Those are like things. So you want to see somebody that has demonstrated speed and initial quickness to beat somebody on the field. And I think that can be one thing as we get into this week and you hear timings and that, hey man, let's go back to that demonstrated speed on the field and playmaking ability. And so that at the top is what I see. But beating somebody to the punch, having an explosive, you know, get off to make someone feel like overwhelmed, that's what all of the great rushers have. Because that. Yes, and it keeps gaining momentum and strength, and it's one of the things I love about Coaches Act, because what we once did, you know, 10 years ago is different than how we do things today, where analytics was just called statistics and we use those in certain ways, and now that's, you know, grown as much. And how do we simulate models for game management? How can we simulate in-game practice, you know, models to show coaching down in distances, different personnel, points of the game? So, yeah, I think it's going to continue to grow, and it is one of the fun parts of the job. Yeah, and I'd say it starts with Adam, you know, wanting to be collaborative with the coaches, and the coaches also being able to deliver the information that, you know, Adam and the scouts need as well. And so there's nothing, the college scouts who are on the road, at the schools, at the games, live, they start the entire process and drive so much of it. And so the coaches get to come in and add a vision of what the player could become in our system. So there's definitely a blend that I think takes place from the better the scouts and the coaches connect and know one another, the easier it is for them to see how they would fit into the offense and the defense. And so that's why through this spring, there's some important processes to go through with both coordinators, coaching staff, scouting staff, to keep encouraging that dialogue, you know, amongst each other.
You're listening live to Commanders head coach Dan Quinn right here on the Team 980 from Indianapolis, courtesy of the Commanders. We'll roll with this for another couple of moments.
Being in the NFL, it was at the San Francisco 49ers, and that was my first experience into that. When you were a college coach, you did the recruiting and you looked at it. And so I would say a number of the people there taught me what excellent could look like in pro football. A guy by the name of Bill McPherson, who had been a coach and was the pro director at that time, talking about DPRs. And that time I didn't know what that was and how would you feature a player and, or, you know, a short yardage fullback, and how different players help the roles and how they go to win. And so since that time, I've been much more interested in what a player can do and how would we feature them than the traits of things that they don't have. And I think that's where it all comes together, as opposed to what a player can't do, is what can they at the very highest level, what makes them so unique and excellent, and try to put them in those spots as often as you can. Yes, it definitely has already started. I would say, how I'm structuring my own time, I think, is a big piece of that too, Ben. But as we're going through the spring, as we're getting into training camp, those are other things that you'll see some differences that, you know, that would feel, you know, differently for me and for the players. So there's a lot that I'm going into and the systems and the processes that we're going through. I've actually started that before it was the end of season evaluations, then the UF, you know, the free agency process. So I've tried to implement as many of those as I could to make sure like, I'm hitting all of those at the highest level that I can. I don't think it's changed the way you evaluate, but I do think there's a different perspective of them coming in with their first paycheck. You know, that was the question years ago, what are you going to get or when you have this signing bonus? And so the fact that some of that's already taking place, there's actually a little less of that for the player when they come, you know, to your organization right away. So in some ways, there's some advantages that I feel. It's interesting to hear the different spots along the ways. Why did guys transfer? Was it opportunity or for more playing time or, you know, a financially, you know, better scenario for themselves? And hearing those stories are helpful, but the evaluation piece has stayed consistent. It does help that you now can even see him in a different system. Okay, what was he playing here? What was that the year prior? How would that look like? And so having different, you know, connection points to that, I think that does help. No, that's their choice. But I think the part that does, like I always come back to, is like, what's that demonstrated tape look like? And the workouts help, but sometimes even for here, obviously I haven't seen all the players yet. So the interview portion and getting to know them without any bias, sometimes that can help. And then I'll write something down that they said, okay, is that real? Is that accurate? And I'll follow up on that. But I do like when I see them do that for the movements in there and between here and pro days, we'll see that. But I think at the end, it still comes down to like their football performances. Yeah, it's a big topic. And earlier we were talking about you know, the mental health, not just when, you know, a tragedy or in this case that you're referring to is when an injury takes place, but making sure how's the ball player doing also, and more importantly, like how's the man doing, knowing that you do feel isolated and separate from the team in those spaces. And so I can't speak for everyone else, but from my own spot, I want to check on them first to see how they're dealing with the injury, dealing with the surgery, you know, because on the swing, when it's getting closer, that's easier. Because then there's something close to back to returning to play. When it's the initial parts of it and knowing I'm staring at 6 weeks, 8 weeks, the entire season, those are harder conversations and you just want to make sure they're checking in. And so I love even during this time, although it's lonelier, but having the players who can do their rehabs in the building, I like it selfishly because I get to see them and check in and see how they're doing. And everybody's got their own process to do that, but it's very important.
All right, that is head coach Dan Quinn meeting with reporters in Indianapolis. You heard, you know, at the beginning, and you just heard there at the end, some of the focus, some of the attention on mental health and how to deal with players and how to make sure that you're not just talking about it. I think as Dan Quinn said at the very beginning of the press conference, you're not just talking about it when tragedy hits, you're talking about it all the time. And you know, he likes kind of this time of the year, players are coming in, rehabbing, what have you. You know, as we said with Rondale Moore yesterday, and when Marshawn Nealon took his own life in, is that end of October, early November? I can't remember exactly when, that yes, mental health has become just as important as physical health, if not more important, because we see it far, 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 far too often translating to tragedy. So I think all of these teams and organizations and every company and every family should be doing anything and everything they can to keep people going, to keep people feeling appreciated, loved, important, respected, right? And one of the ways we do that, just as a society, one of the ways we do that is, yes, of course, you tell somebody you love them, especially if that's true. I mean, sometimes you might have to tell somebody you love them if you're not feeling it. But you tell them you love them. But more importantly, it's not just, hey, I love you. It's taking the time. It's communicating. It's asking questions. It's discussing. It's paying attention. Nobody's going to remember everything. Nobody's going to be able to pay 100% attention, lock in on everything. But it's so much more than just, hey, man, simple little text. Hey, man, a phone call. Hey, man, I love you. You know, and I've got to do a better job of it, too, in my personal life. I mean, I am on my phone nonstop. I mean, I probably am on my phone more than I work on this job in a week. Because it's trying to keep everybody on the front burner as opposed to on the back burner. And it's hard to do that in society. It's hard to do that in the NFL. And you see, you know, again, two NFL players have taken their lives in the last couple of months. Current NFL players. Not retired. You know, and who knows the CTE element? I don't know. And I'm not going to say I know. But, I mean, it was important enough. I don't know who it was that was asking the questions at the front and the beginning of what we just heard for Dan Quinn to talk about mental health. And it may be a little uncomfortable. It may be, I don't know, 20 plus years ago, I would often dismiss it and say, that guy's just a lunatic. He's just a crazy. And from time to time, I still say that, believe that. And every time now, not everybody faces the same issues, right? Some people willingly and purposefully make mistakes and do their best to sabotage themselves. But the point being is, to our knowledge, you know, with what happened with Rondale Moore over the weekend, to our knowledge, there was none of that. Marshawn Nealon was a little bit of a different story, it seemed, but you get the point. And just moving forward. So we have to keep that always in mind. Myself, first and foremost. All right, coming up next, more reaction to Dan Quinn. There wasn't a whole lot of meat on that bone, quite honestly. It was, you know, some about John Harbaugh, some about Mike McCarthy. There wasn't a whole lot of meat on that bone. One thing that I guess I heard that stood out to me, I'll give it to you and we'll respond to it. And if you want to hop in on anything you heard, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980 on the Team 980.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so Dan Quinn addressing reporters just a couple of minutes ago. There really, again, wasn't anything interesting, to be honest. Like from a Commanders football perspective, there was obviously, as we addressed, the mental health issue and his thoughts on Mike McCarthy in Pittsburgh and John Harbaugh with the Giants and the division, so on and so forth. But one thing he did kind of talk about was structuring systems and getting out in front and doing things a little bit different, because you're going to be dealing with a new offensive coordinator, first-time play caller, and a 30-year-old in David Blau. First-time NFL defensive play caller, 47-year-old Durante Jones. And that also meant, as Adam Peters talked about earlier today, hey, man, we got in front of everybody, every football member of the organization, and the two new coaches explained brilliantly what they were looking for, how they coach, what their scheme was, what have you. And Quinn, who is a very process-oriented guy, he's one of the things I like about Dan. Like, he's far from perfect, but one of the things I liked about Dan is he's very retrospective, right? Like, God knows I am far from perfect, right? I mean, insanely far from perfect. If you listen to this radio show for an hour, you know that. Don't laugh. I see you two over there. But anyway, Quinn is not afraid to say, hey, I made mistakes. I did things wrong. Here's what I've got to do to get better. Like, I think that was one of the things that rubbed them wrong about Cliff Kingsbury. Like, Cliff is like, my system is my system. Now, we don't know that for sure, but that's what we've heard, rumors, innuendo, people you talk to behind the scenes, what have you. Right? So Quinn is saying, hey, look, we've got to do things a little bit differently. Now, will it translate to, I mean, it's awesome that, you know, you have these guys in the building. They're obviously evaluating tape. Now they're switching to the to free agency and the draft. Then they'll start implementing their systems on the field, in the classroom, in meetings, what have you, in mid to late April. Then they'll be on the field in various OTA workout sessions throughout the month of May, like more team on-the-field drills, 7-on-7, no pads, no hitting, of course, at the end of May into early June, and then training camp. I mean, it's not like they don't have time, but when you're 5-12 and you're on the warm seat and clearly something is not working, we know on defense what's not working. On offense, it's a little bit more muddled. How much of it injury, how much of it scheme, style, system, all of that. There is a ton of work to do. Not to mention, again, free agency, you know, and deciding how many of the 27, 28 players it is remaining that you want to bring back, can bring back, afford to bring back, what have you. I mean, obviously, the people that they want to bring back, I'm sure they're very much in touch with, as we saw with Andrew Wiley, as we saw recently with Tress Way. Doesn't mean you're going to be able to bring back everybody that you'd like to bring back. You know, maybe they want to bring back Jeremy McNichols, but he gets an offer from somewhere else for a 2-year deal, and they only want to pay a 1-year deal, which is basically what he's done the last 2 years. Just using that as an example. I would just say this, and I have not heard the direct question being asked to Dan Quinn, but it was, again, very, very, very difficult the way the NFL does the scouting combine press conferences to hear the question, even as we played it live for you on the air. I have not heard anybody say, hey, Dan, directly, last year there was a perception and maybe even a reality that training camp and the off-season program and all of that was a little bit on the easier or light side. Is there a plan to do things differently this year? Is there a plan to play guys more with new systems? Is Jaden Daniels going to play 4 snaps because you're scared to death of injury? In essentially a new system. Not totally new, but largely new. And I might be missing it. I counted officially based on Wikipedia, my chart, you know, and what I've researched during the show. 8 new coaches, or 8 coaches that were part of the staff for the last 2 years that are now gone. Cliff Kingsbury, Joe Witt, Brian Johnson, Bobby Johnson, Tavita Pritchard, who took the Stanford job, that's 5. Ryan Kerrigan, Sharif Floyd, that's 7. And Jason Simmons. I don't think I'm missing anybody, but I might be. 8 new coaches. To me, that spells, that screams more time on the grass. As much time as possible. Stop being Club Med and let's freaking go. Let's work hard. I don't want to say run people into the ground. I understand there's rules. I understand you want to preserve guys' bodies. You know what didn't work last year? Playing Jaden Daniels 4 snaps in the preseason. That didn't work. Did not work. You know what didn't work? Resting guys every day, every other day, so that they would avoid injury. Didn't work. There was a lot of things that didn't work last year. So, whatever gobbledygook Dan Quinn was talking about with changing systems and this, that, and the other thing, the only thing I want to know is, are we actually going to be ready to play week 1? Because I don't think they were, and I don't think anybody reasonably thinks they were really ready to play week 1 against the Giants last year. All right, let's get to Little before the bottom of the hour break. What's up, Little? How are you?
I'm Cock-a-doodle-doo.
What's up, Little?
Shout out to your man, hey, Mac, and Cowboy Bewildered. Hey, Rooster. When I look at it, man, I know I just be joking with Cowboy B. When I look at it, they piggyback off of Lap. That was well spoken, Lap. Me and my wifey, Rooster, we donate to Best Buddies heavily every year, and also DDS. DDS is Disability Disabled Services. Mm-hmm. They find jobs for the disabled adults. You know, DDS is an organization in D.C.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we try to do heavily contributions every year, man, and that's something to pay attention to because, you know, we got to all look at each other, man, and keep our heads up no matter what. Now, talking about the NFL draft, go give me Falk from Auburn, because I look at it now. He gonna prove his point in the combine. Kid is strong. He ate Fortino up. The tackle everybody talking about, I think his last name Fortino. He ate him up, and he said he couldn't. And you know one thing about Falk, I never see him get pushed backwards when they come to the run. He plays a hell of a run when they come to defensive run. And he can play that ball. So, you know, that's all I got for you, big fella. I'm going to holler at the legend because they say we don't have not one player that requires a double team. And I think that's right.
Just what you were saying about Kelce Falk, I'll just say this. Like, I don't think he's a top 10 guy from what I've seen so far. Up. But I think if you trade back in the top 12. We'll see.
Because Auburn didn't have no echelon record this year playing. You watch him in the combine, and he's going to prove his point. I think he's the strongest defensive end in the combine. Hey, look, that's all I got for you, Rooster. God bless you. Stay up, big
Thank you, Little. Appreciate you. Good to hear from you. All right, let's do a trending alert right here, right now on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Mel Kiper's latest mock draft when we return. All right, so you just heard from Commanders head coach Dan Quinn earlier today and throughout the show. You've heard from general manager Adam Peters. Among the highlights, Peters saying no decision has been made just yet on Marshawn Lattimore. Obviously, Andrew Wiley re-signing, and Peters did confirm that. And Brian Johnson leaving for the L.A. Rams. That means at least 8 assistants have now been let go by the Commanders organization or have chosen to leave over the last couple of months. Meanwhile, the Falcons are going to release Kirk Cousins, a report says, Ian Cunningham, the new GM, on March 11th, first day of the league year. The Texans GM, Nick Caserio, says any question about a C.J. Stroud trade is quote-unquote moronic. The Jets plan to use either the franchise tag or the transition tag on running back Breece Hall, unless they can get a deal. And the Dolphins' new general manager, John Eric Sullivan, said, quote, everything's on the table when it comes to Tua Tagovailoa and his contract situation and staying with the Miami Dolphins. Tonight, the Wizards back on the road in Atlanta. No Trae Young, no Anthony Davis, and no Alex Saar. 7:30 on 106.7 The Fan and the Odyssey app against the Atlanta Hawks. Caps back in action tomorrow night at home against the Philadelphia Flyers, and that's what's trending.
With the new year upon us, there's no better time to take control of your finances. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, before we get to Paulie to wrap things up and dum-dum of the day, wanted to give you this. If I can find it. I think I just closed it out. That sucks. Give me 1 second here. I think I mistakenly closed the window out. Mel Kiper's latest mock draft. Mock draft. Now, again, remember, Mel Kiper, I love Mel Kiper. He knows a lot. He knows much more than I'll ever know. He also has done favors for people and agents. There is no doubt about that. He has been convinced by people beyond just his evaluations. I truly feel that. And maybe, just maybe, Caleb Downs at number 2 to the Jets might be an example of that. He's got Mendoza going 1 to the Raiders, ho-hum. Caleb Downs going number 2 to the Jets. David Bailey, who we talked about earlier in the show and who we talked about constantly, number 3 to Arizona. Arvell Reese, number 4, to Tennessee from Ohio State. He's got the Giants at number 5, taking Spencer Fanneau, the offensive tackle from Utah. And that was a switch, he said, from Carnell Tate, who goes at number 6 to the Cleveland Browns. And at number 7, a 4th Ohio State Buckeye, which, according to Kiper and ESPN Research, would be the most ever for one school in the top 7 picks of the draft, if Kiper's right, and the Commanders go with Sonny Styles. Now, Sonny Styles can play inside. He can line up in space. 6'4", 245. I've seen him tackle running backs, tight ends, little wide receivers out of the slot, line them up, close in on them, fill the gap, fill the hole, make the play. I don't know how much football IQ he has. I don't know that yet. Got to do some work. I assume pretty good, right? But he's got speed. He's young, of course. If you put him in the linebacker room, along with Cade Medrano and Jordan McGee and Frankie Louvu and whoever else you want as an extra linebacker that can play special teams, yeah, I think that's pretty enticing, right? I'm pretty sure Sonny Styles would line up and be the Mike right away. Right away. But that's a very young room. That's a very young room. And if the new defense is as multiple and as shifty and chameleon-like, I think as we're all expecting, you know, that is difficult to expect a young room to pick that up right away and to excel at it and be good at it right away. I mean, it's a risk. One thing you could say, there would be no, again, what everybody criticizes Bobby Wagner for or the Commanders coaching staff or organization for, which is, hey, man, Bobby Wagner's too slow, too old. Especially in pass coverage. Now, the problem is I don't know if Sonny Styles, Medrano, or Jordan McGee exactly know what they're doing, especially in a new system with a new staff and at the NFL level. I have no idea. My hesitancy would be, man, communication, being able to really cut it loose, people in the right spot, would some of the benefit, speed, athleticism, physicality, be neutralized by that until they get comfortable and ramp up? And how long is it until they're comfortable? I don't know. I mean, it's something I'm thinking about, obviously. Whereas I think Bobby Wagner, boom, knows the system in and out. Can get downhill and rush the passer. We know can stop the run. Struggles in pass coverage. Is there a way you can clean that up? Is there a way you can cover up around that? Bobby Wagner, by the way, according to Jordan Schultz, and probably not a surprise, wants to come back and play. Plans to play again. Now, like he didn't mention the Commanders at all, really, in his report that Bobby Wagner wants to come back. And remember, when Durante Jones met with the media 2 weeks ago, I think today, he didn't mention Bobby Wagner by name at all. So, I don't know. While I'm not definitively saying no Bobby Wagner back, I'm very much leaning that way. Very much leaning that way. All right, let's get to... So, Sonny Styles was the pick. He mentioned keep an eye on Reuben Bain and the receiver class as a whole if the board falls this way. And by the way, he's got Jeremiah Love going number 9 and Reuben Bain going 10 after Mekhi Lemon, the wide receiver from USC to the Saints. So certainly we'll see. All right, let's get to Paulie next up and last up. What up, Paulie? How are you?
Doing well, Rooster. Hail to the W, man.
Attaboy.
Hell to the W, man. Listen, I think I don't have a problem with Wagner coming back. It just got to be at a reduced role. You can't play 17 games 100% of the snaps, period. And as far, you know, if there's a but to every player and a what if, or there's concerns about everything, but you're not going to know unless you put them on the field and let them play. And that was the problem I had with this staff last year. Like, don't tell me that you're struggling in positions and you got – guys that you drafted just sitting the bench, but the guys that's ahead of them is not getting the job done because you're worried about their IQ. Well, they're not going to develop IQ unless you put them out there and let them play. And that's what we need to move forward to, man. I mean, and it's like the coaching staff. I'm not worried about them getting rid of 8 coaches. I mean, we went 5-12 last year. That's called taking accountability. And you'll see the same thing with some players. Some players shouldn't come back either. You know, so I have no problem with this turnover. It has to be a turnover. It'd be ignorant for us to come back with the same staff and most of the same players and think we're going to get different results. You know, to me, it's not going to work like that, man. And that's why, my number one thing is offseason is I'm not going through this contract negotiation thing with Larry Tunsil like I went with Terry. I mean, he's not a foundation player for us. He was here for 1 year. In a year, we went 5-12. It wasn't a sore spot. You know, it was they looked at it as a cherry on top of the sundae move last year. And the sundae melted quickly. So I would be moving, you know, if I can't get a deal done with him quickly, especially before the draft, I would be moving on from Tunsil. You got depth at that position. You drafted a left tackle last year. You drafted a tackle in the third round the year before that. You know, so let's move on. Let's recoup some picks and move forward. So that's my whole thing, man. I think we have to be proactive and be aggressive in this offseason, man. Not living in the past, you know, and playing this Madden game of, well, he's the number two pass protector in the league. Okay, well, you know what? You got to balance that out with money and cohesion and chemistry also. And I'm all for the youth movement moving forward. That's my thing, man. So, you know, and also what you was talking about, Brandon Ayuk, sign him up. If he passes, physical with the 49ers releasing, sign him up, man. I mean, clearly, to me, and I said it to Sheehan last week, to me, I look at it as the same way we looked at Terry, and people wanted to say after Terry signed, there was a fraction in the relationship. But clearly, there was a fraction in that relationship. He viewed himself as one of the best receivers in the league. The numbers say he was one of the best receivers in the league in 23, top three receiver, and they dragged that out all the way to September. And it fractured the relationship. And it put a bad taste in his mouth. You know, we got to stop killing the players for taking control of their own narrative and saying it's dumb or it's stupid or he got a screw loose. No, he took control of his own narrative. We talked about this last year at the Combine or the year before that when players didn't want to throw or run or whatever. We try, you know, people were trying to kill them for it. But no, you know, they taking control of their narrative. You know, the front office does it all the time. But when the player want to get that leverage back, we want to tend to down them and say it's a bad thing or they have a character problem. And I totally disagree with that, man. So those are my points, my thoughts, Russell. Appreciate you letting me get that out there without you arguing with me. I love you for that. Hell to the W,
of course, Paulie. I would never do such a thing. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let him run on that, and that'll be the last word on the phones. Coming up, dum-dum of the day to wrap things up here on a Tuesday on the Team 980. Die coming up next at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. It's the DOC. He'll take you home on the Team 980 along with Anthony Haney. But first, we wrap up our show with Dumb Dumb of the Day. Hey, Mac, have you ever heard of the term a squatter?
Seems, no. What is it?
Okay. It's probably not what you were originally thinking. Or maybe what you out there in Radio La La Land were thinking. A squatter, legal definition, is someone who occupies a space, a property, land, building, what have you, without the owner's consent, legal title, or right to be there. It's an unauthorized occupation of a piece of property, form of trespassing in a criminal act, though squatters often have way more rights than you would think they ever should have. So, I take you to the suburbs of Washington, D.C., Maryland. Yes, that's right. A woman, a 40-year-old woman named Tamika, if I'm saying that right, Good, Tamika Good, 40 years old, recently returned to a ritzy 7,500-square-foot home in the suburbs of D.C., in Maryland, presenting herself as a bankruptcy expert, charging $800 for courses online, and sharing social media posts of her Porsche. However, in reality, Ms. Good was considered a squatter, living on a total monthly income, again, in a 7,500-square-foot home that she was not supposed to be in, a total monthly income of $946, which included $538 in child support and $408 in food stamps, according to bankruptcy records that the Daily Mail got a hold of. You know what that doesn't include? Money from her working. You know why? She wasn't working. She instead sent her 16-year-old daughter. Most 16-year-olds, I don't know, call me crazy, or still in school. She sent her 16-year-old daughter out to work instead of going to school while hanging out and living a life of luxury in a $2.3 million mansion. And she looked good doing it. God love her. She was called a shyster by a neighbor She was. She apparently had a presence online, the bankruptcy thing, charging $800 to do your paperwork. She doesn't know what she's doing. Courts are trying to hold her in contempt. This neighbor said she was a pre-law student at William & Mary down in Williamsburg. This was the neighbor. But the neighbor became suspicious after the woman moved into the next-door mansion in leafy Bethesda, Maryland, when the previous owners of the mansion faced foreclosure, and the bank took possession of the home in the summer of 2025. He uncovered paperwork alleging that she was far from a self-made success and that she actually was a bankrupt candidate who sent her daughter, 16 years old, to work at Paris Baguette Bakery. She wasn't going to school. The mother wasn't working. Government benefits, the only support for the family. So what happened was the neighbor set up a camera to film the woman living in the mansion. Claimed that multiple neighbors reported the situation to CPS, Child Protection Services. No action was taken. Back and forth they go. Her husband, the woman, is in jail. But he briefly lived with her at the mansion. The woman actually filed a lawsuit against the neighbor and accused him of stalking and trespassing. Thankfully, it was thrown out by a judge in district court in Maryland. What an absolute mess. What an absolute mess. Husband back in jail. She was finally convicted of breaking and entering and trespassing late last month and was sentenced to 90 days in Montgomery County's detention center. What an absolute insane asylum. I mean, she looks the part, man. I'm just telling you, she looks the part. I can see how people would be fooled, for lack of a better term. Dumb dumb of the day, indeed. The DOC is no dumb dumb. He's coming up next. He'll take you home on a Tuesday afternoon. Thanks to my guy, AMAC. Thanks to Benjamin Robinson from Grinding the Mocks from Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine. We'll go back to Indy tomorrow and have more reaction, of course, to everything that was said by the Commanders, powers that be. And the Wizards back in action tonight. And the Caps go back at it tomorrow night. Adios on the Team 980. We'll see you tomorrow at 1.
Thank you. Yeah, you can go sit down, Russo. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.